House of Representatives will be responsible on the Ways and Means Committee for protecting Social Security, protecting the United States. Special thanks to Jimmy Roosevelt for bringing us here together today. It was his grandfather who outlined the four compass points of our democracy: freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, freedom from fear. That is what we are celebrating here today. And my question to you is, are you willing in 2017 to fight for those four freedoms? In a little over a week from today, we will celebrate the life and the legacy of the great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In 1963, he led one of the greatest marches this country has ever seen, when hundreds of thousands of Americans joined him on the Mall in our capital. It was there that he delivered his I Have a Dream speech and expressed the highest aspirations of the civil rights movement, building on President Roosevelt's four freedoms to determine who was entitled in our country to all of those four freedoms. The dream Dr. King shared on that march resonates today with as much urgency and truth as it did those many years ago. But that's because there are others out there who also have a dream. They dream that one day our nation will be surrounded by a wall built with bigotry and hate. They have a dream that one day our nation will judge you by your race, by your religion, by the country of your origin. They have a dream that one day our nation will have no more Muslims, or mosques, or Planned Parenthood, or Social Security. These people do not want the dream of Dr. King or President Roosevelt to be realized. They want to see it crushed. And make no mistake, these same people who traffic in division and hate will do everything they can to ensure that we continue to live in an unequal society. That is why you are here today. And the values that truly matter here in Massachusetts and all across America. The revolution began here in Lexington and in the Berkshires, the American Revolution. The abolitionist movement started here in the Berkshires and in Massachusetts. The suffragette movement started here in Massachusetts and in the Berkshires. The movement against the war in Vietnam started here and in the not just any state, we are the state that begins these revolutions. Woo-hoo! The future of democracy hangs in the balance. We fought for universal health care first, and we won here in Massachusetts. We fought for the highest minimum wage in the United States of America. Regardless of sexual orientation here in Massachusetts. This is an epic battle for our democracy. The work that we do today will help to create a better future. And so now, I ask you, Are you willing to fight to ensure that NRA now stands for not relevant anymore in America? At the highest level. And will you march to ensure that we give an apology to an entire generation of African Americans who we imprison because of the crack cocaine? Together in order to protect this vision of Martin Luther King and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. President Roosevelt said that the true test of our progress as a nation is not whether we do more for those who already have much, but whether we do enough for those who have too little. Yeah. That entire class is going to be challenged over this next 4 years. And ladies and gentlemen, let the rest of the country know that the battle begins here in the Birches in January.
Jim Roosevelt, and to all of you, on a Saturday afternoon, we have found time to come here to talk about our faith going forward as opposed to the fear of having us turn back. There's one great moment across New England that I always treasure, and that's whenever you visit a congregational church. Because in every city and town across New England, there's the congregational church, and across the way, there's the city or town hall. There's the public green, and there's always nearby the public library. That was a congregational theme. Now, you will often hear people say, my friend, my good friend, my close friend. For Eddie Markey and I, we've really been good friends for a long period of time. And I will tell you this, you couldn't be better served by an individual than you are by Eddie Markey. He's just a great pal of ours. There's a word in the Old Testament that we don't use much anymore, and the word is rejoice. And today we rejoice in your company. And we rejoice with all of you on this occasion to remind people of the America that we all helped to build. Growing up, as I did, the name Roosevelt was pretty much saintly, because the idea had been, for the first time, we had been given a chance. And that's what I hope we bequeath to succeeding generations, that what good had come to us, we want to give the next generation a chance. So we have today the vision of Roosevelt, and we have the imagery of Rockwell. And it has both withstood the test of time. And the other moment I would share with you today is sort of a personal reflection, and it is this. I was raised on Roosevelt's Social Security Survivor Benefit Initiative. That's how my sisters and I live, with an aunt and a grandmother, in a big household with a lot of uncles. But without the guarantee of Roosevelt's Social Security plan, I don't know how we would have done it. $119 a month for each one of us. A reminder that families come in all different shapes and sizes. And never to forget, it was Roosevelt's vision And also, in 1935, when he signed the Social Security Act, he probably was able to foresee that in 1965, Lyndon Johnson would sign the Medicare Act, which is an amendment to the Social Security Act. So I'm going to just close on this note as we begin to debate these bedrock guarantees that have made America a much more equitable and better place. Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, and yes, the Affordable Care Act as well, which I helped to write. As we hear some of the vacuous debate over the coming months and years, always remember this. You can outlive an annuity. You cannot outlive Social Security.
Next, we will have Ethan Zuckerman, Director of MIT Center on Civic Media.
I asked the senator and the congressman if they wouldn't mind warming up the crowd for me, and I have to say, talk about constituent service. It's amazing. When Franklin Delano Roosevelt invoked the four freedoms in 1941 in a State of the Union address, the world was at war, and the president wanted Americans to support the government spreading these freedoms around the world. Now, we're in a very different world now. Decades of international cooperation and unification, they're giving way to isolationism, nationalism, demonization of migrants and marginalized groups around the world. These scary trends aren't just happening here. We see them from Britain to Hungary. We see them from France to Russia. We see it in South Africa and in Poland. Now, Roosevelt saw the U.S. government as a unique organization, as a guarantor of these freedoms around the world. And we fought for these in Japan, in Germany. We built these through the Marshall Plan, and then around the world through hard and soft power. But that's another way in which we're in a different world. The 1960s, if you asked Americans whether they believed the federal government was doing a good job in representing them, more than 70% would tell you they had a great deal of confidence. You ask that now and it's down around 20%. So we have a real challenge. Even when we're represented by wonderful people like these, we can't expect the federal government to do all of this for us. We have to figure out how we, individually and collectively, find a way to fight for these freedoms. When Norman Rockwell painted freedom of speech, he depicted one of our neighbors, a man from Arlington, Vermont, standing up to dissent at a local town meeting. Now, at that point, that was about as public as speech got. But now every one of us has the power to speak, potentially to a global audience, using nothing more than the phones we've all got in our pockets. If you don't like how this march gets covered, write a blog post, make a video, make your own media. But there's a responsibility that comes with this speech. We can't just speak. We also have to learn how to listen. When everyone is speaking, it is too easy just to listen to the people that we want to hear. We have to listen deeply and widely to people in other countries and to people in our own country who we don't agree with. And we've got to do this because people are scared. Children whose parents brought them to the United States, who discover they're not citizens when they try to apply to college. Our Muslim brothers and sisters who are unfairly accused when terrorist acts occur around the world. Human rights defenders who are under threat in communities all over the globe. The way we achieve freedom from fear is through solidarity, through listening to what people have to say, using our ability to speak to support them, defend them, and stand with them. This is a scary moment. It's a time when it looks like the progress we've made over the last 70 years might reverse, where it looks like the world, instead of getting closer together, might shrink and might come apart. But the good news is that we get to decide how big a world we want to live in. We get to decide how to speak, how to listen, and how to stand together against fear. Yeah.
from Miss Hall's school.
Hello, everyone. So a little bit of background on this piece that I wrote. I have a little sister. She's 10. She's amazing. I love her. And recently they started learning about slavery in school, and one night on TV, we were watching the news with her, my mother, and myself, and there was a segment on all the recent police shootings of last year and the year before that, and Black Lives Matter. And she said, "Mommy, I thought you said slavery had ended." So it's inspired. "You tell me once you had me in chains. Once I was enslaved and I belonged to you. Once my life was in your hands, my on and off switch. You tell me once you had me in chains, chains of metal and steel, and that you sold me off, no big deal. You tell me once that my people were your own, that you boxed them up and stole us from our home. Across the sea and through the fields, we worked dawn to dusk, day and night. But that was then, and this is now. You still have me in chains, but this time, I'm too loud. This time, I'm too proud to be me. This time, it's what I wear. This time, it's the texture of my hair. This time, it's the boy in the black hoodie who couldn't save himself when he put his hands up. Perhaps the next Martin, Malcolm, or Ali. Hands up, hands on the trigger. Bang, bang, gone with the wind. Please, God, forgive us for our sins. You had me in chains, you tell me in school. You tell me that for my skin I should be ashamed. Ashamed of the kings and queens of the African sun who wore my skin and were the first ones. You have me in chains, but even though my hands may be chained and my feet may be tied, my mind will never be tamed and never will let my voice and freedom be denied. Thank you."
Massachusetts chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations.
Good afternoon, Berkshire County.
Hello.
It is great to be here with you all. I am so grateful to you all for having me. I'm thankful for Shirley Edgerton for inviting me up and the entire coalition, and all of our wonderful speakers today, and most importantly to you, this wonderful, awesome community. Thank you for being you. Today is historic, right? And right now, we are defining a legacy. We are not meeting just for the sake of meeting. We are changing our destiny. And here's my two cents about how that's going to happen. As a lawyer and a mom and a Muslim whose faith is under attack, and who comes from an interfaith community, my strongest belief is that we all who practice a faith need to hold on tight to our faiths and tight to our congregations. And if we've slipped a little bit, then we need to go back to the houses of worship and our faith communities and encourage those communities to break bread and join hands with people of other denominations and other faiths and other beliefs. Let's demystify one another and dehumanize one another. Let's celebrate our pluralism and don't let others scare us about us based on our faith. Let's increase our religious literacy. Learn what your own beliefs are. Learn what others believe in. You'll start to see that there are more commonalities than differences. particularly between the three major Abrahamic faiths, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. When I tell people that Muslims believe in and love Jesus, Son of Mary, and His Blessed Mother, and that Muslims, Christians, and Jews all accept the Father Abraham for his significance in the creation of those religions, you'd be surprised at how many people don't know that. We have to bridge these gaps of lack of awareness. If you don't claim a religious faith or a religious belief, that's okay. Hold on to your community. Hold on to your neighbors. Hold on to your friends and your families, and work to protect your freedoms, our freedoms, their freedoms as neighbors, to be free of want, and to be able to be free of expressing yourself and worshiping as you see fit. This is our global community, and these are the rights that we are owed and that we owe each other. And this is the legacy that we're defining right here in Berkshire County and right here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Thank you all. Good luck to all of us going into the new year. May God bless the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and may God bless the United States of America.
The motivator of cooperation is so pleased at this time. Wonderful words, and they are cooperating. Let's give a round of applause. Next, we have attorney James Jim Roosevelt, grandson of Franklin Delano.
This afternoon with Senator Markey, with Congressman Neal, with Mayor Tyre, with Representative Farley Bouvier, and with the Reverend Clergy. But it is a real privilege to be here with all of you who are what democracy is about. When my grandfather, FDR, gave the Four Freedoms speech, which as you've heard was the State of the Union address, in 1941, the world and the United States were facing authoritarianism in Europe and Asia, economic hardship, racism, and isolationism. The four freedoms that he articulated, freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear, embodied both the US Constitution and the principles of the New Deal. They are essential to FDR's legacy, so much so that they are carved into the stone of the FDR Memorial in Washington, D.C. FDR believed that they were the essence of a democratic society. He listed the benefits of democracy as economic opportunity, employment, social security, and adequate health care. The challenges that we face at the beginning of 2017 have different specifics, but the same essence. Today we face unprecedented assaults on each of the four freedoms. On freedom of speech, we've seen the banning of the Washington Post and BuzzFeed from presidential campaign events. We've seen fake news from Breitbart to Alex Jones to RT, the Russian propaganda television network that's carried on many of our cable systems. We've seen freedom of worship attacked for the first time in 75 years, an attempt to ban people of a particular religion from this country and to create a registry of those people. We've seen an attack on the things that protect us and freedom from want, an attack on the Affordable Care Act, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. They all face efforts, serious efforts, to repeal, privatize, and cut benefits and shift responsibility back to local governments where it was 100 years ago with the poor farms and the overseers of the public welfare. And we see a serious attack on freedom from fear. From Oklahoma City to chance of go back where you came from, to string her up, to Orlando, to Fort Lauderdale, we are confronted by a culture of weapons and verbal assault. It is essential that all Americans rally, as you are doing today, to defend our democracy. Our country must have a government that protects us from these dangers. To do that, our leaders and we ourselves must defend the four freedoms.
Privilege, because apparently our choir is not here. It falls upon this old white guy to lead you in a freedom song. And so I'm going to ask you to sing with me something that I learned from my grandmother's pastor after he came back on the march on Washington. And so you have to put your, you can't have anything in your hands, right? Because you're going to have to clap on this, okay? So. Can you do that?
Yeah.
Get rid of your tongue? Okay. So it goes like this. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Keep on walking, keep on talking, marching for the freedom.
Turn me around, turn me around, don't let nobody turn me around.
Keep on walking, keep on talking, marching with the freedom.
Community College Multicultural Center Director.
So, I wonder if you guys have ever been in a house of mirrors. You know, when you go to the Big E or something like that, you walk in and you see yourself a little bit thinner, a little bit slender, or maybe you have a cone head and big hips. And you just laugh about it, and it's fun when you go into the mirror house to look at that image and laugh. But it's not fun when the images that you see portrayed of yourself are distorted. But it doesn't matter if I stand in front of you, a woman, a mother, a sister, a friend, a mentor, and when you hear my accent and you ask me where I am, I tell you Mexico. I'm a Mexican immigrant. And all you see is a criminal, a dangerous person. As far as I'm concerned, and I know I'm a little bit crazy, I know I've never killed anybody. I know I've never sold or dealt or used illegal drugs. I know I've never raped anybody. I know I'm not the best person. And nobody sent me here, by the way. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm a decent person. Thank you. And I appreciate those who are willing to see me outside of the House of Mirrors. Because I, as you know, I work at Berkshire Community College and I have the privilege to work with the immigrant population. And I know that nobody sent them here. They came here.
They came here just like your mother, your grandfather, or your grandparents, or your great-great-grandparents. I don't know if you forgot what generation immigrant you are, but I think we could agree we are all children of immigrants. So I know they come here for a better life because they are actually fleeing places of danger, because they fear for their life, because there is no picture of them where they can put their children in bed at night and be secure. Because they know that no matter how hard they work, they will always want. And if they pray, they might be killed. And God forbid, they might love the wrong kind of person, right? Whether it's a gender issue, or a religious issue, or a class issue. They flee to be free. That's why we come to America, because we believe in the American dream. It's not dead. It's quite alive. I see it happen every year at graduation. And I know that dreams are still possible in this country. We come, we learn English, we go to school, we go to college, we graduate, we transfer, we fall in love and we start families, and we believe we're living the American dream. But I can tell you, sometimes dreams turn into nightmares. And it's not an understatement if I say that many, many, many of us are afraid of our life turning into a nightmare. I sometimes use the movie of The Sound of Music because I think it's popular. I hope you like it and I hope you know it. And I think about it because, unfortunately, words are very powerful. And divisive rhetoric can make neighbors hate their neighbors. And even young lovers, remember Liesl and Rudolph? I don't know, I am 16 going on 17. Well, they liked each other, but he chased her and her family. And we know the Bond trap is not just a fictitious family, it's actually a family that does live not very far away from here. So my quest and my ask for you is that you don't forget that underneath my skin color, my accent, my label, and some of us like to dye our hair purple or pink or blue, there's still one human being underneath that person. I was just told about a dear friend of mine who's from China. She was born in China. She was adopted when she was an infant and raised by a loving white family. And as she was walking in the Berkshire Mall with her mother, some lady said, "Go home." I don't know why home. I also think about Pam, who was first known as Sam, who was very pleased to know that she could use the bathroom where she would feel safe. And now she's afraid that her state and her community will turn their back on her and force her to use a men's restroom where she might actually be beaten. I think that some of us are afraid of being assaulted, insulted, and forced to live in a way that just does not resonate with whom we are. I ask you that as we fight for things that are very important, that you just remember that beneath the skin, there's just a human being. Thank you.
President.
Good afternoon. I guess there's no one here that better understands the 3-minute rule than I, so I will do my best to make sure that I don't get in trouble. Just a little over 6 months ago, many of us gathered in Park Square across the street, standing in support for the Orlando community after the tragedy that occurred at Pulse Nightclub. That tragedy reignited fear in many of us. While afraid, it was a pleasure then, and it is now, to see so many people standing up for equality and justice for all. reflecting on FDR's four essential human freedoms: the freedom of speech, religion, want, and fear. Freedom from fear. As a member of the LGBTQ community, why do we have to have so many letters? I understand the fear that many of us feel at times because people whose opinions and values are not the same as ours and they express it. But I also understand that prejudice and bigotry is not something that just affects members of the gay community, but also affects people of color, immigrants, people with disabilities, people with different religious views, and the list goes on and on. Today, I stand with all of you to make a statement that hatred, prejudice, and bigotry must be overcome. The most uncomfortable thing I do as an elected official at times is to speak about me personally. You see, about 15 years ago, my private life was my private life, and my public life was my public life. However, I've learned over that time that there's a time to make a statement, and then there's also a time to remain private. When the time comes to make a statement, it is not just about me or others that are gay. It's about all those who are different, that need to be encouraged to stand up to bullies and those that choose to live through prejudice and bigotry. I have learned that I am not just a community leader, but I am someone who must stand up for all. To quote Taylor Swift, and I quote, "My parents taught me to never judge others based on whom they love, what color their skin is, or what their religious beliefs are. Why make miserable for someone when you can use your positive energy for good? We don't need to share the same opinion as others, but we need to be respectful. When you hear people making hateful comments, stand up to them. Point out what a waste it is to hate, and you can open their eyes," end quote. I'm not here as your city council president, and I'm not here as a member of the gay community. I want to get rid of labels. I'm here simply as a member of the community. The community that I know and love, the community that cares and fights for the greater good of all, and the fact that too many times the community is segmented by whatever differences separate us rather than unites us. But today, we have united, and we can unite every day. We don't need a march or a rally. Why? Because we know that love and respect can overcome hate and intolerance. Last summer, I saw a community that came together because we recognized that the differences that separate us should always unite us in our struggles for equality and the need to protect and support each other as one community, instead of a community made up of several groups working separately. And I do believe that the organizers of this event have achieved that. It is not our place for any of us to judge another. I know that it is much easier to preach about acceptance and tolerance than it is to live and practice it, but we must continue to come together as a community and promote respect, love, and tolerance, rather than to be crushed by those that disrespect, hate, or are intolerant. In closing, I want to thank everyone who came out today and remind everyone that as we live our everyday lives and continue to push for respect and tolerance for all walks of life, not just the ones that we personally belong to. I know that we have many differences, but I believe in our community and I know we can succeed. Today, we have made a statement to stand up to hatred, bigotry, and prejudice. Thank you.
Morrison, the 2015 Berkshire Labor Person of the Year.
Good afternoon. As we begin 2017, I am more certain than ever that all of us need to stand together if we are ever to achieve a society freed from want. In his 1941 State of the Union speech, FDR stated, "The third is freedom from want, which means economic understandings which will secure to every nation a healthy peacetime life for its inhabitants everywhere in the world." As we stand together today here in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, I have a vision of this freedom to share with you. Freedom from want means that we will all have what we need. Everyone needs and deserves a job that minimally pays a living wage. Regardless of gender or sexual orientation, we all need safe places to live, food, affordable and renewable utilities, public transportation, and health care. Those who cannot work deserve the support of our community, our commonwealth, and our nation, so that we may live in dignity too. We need affordable, available early childhood care and education. Allowing all of our children to arrive at school ready and able to learn. We need a public pre-K through higher ed system that offers access and support so that all students can graduate, find their passions and their life's work without being crushed by debt. Right. Harsh rules that result in our students of color and of lower class being disproportionately disciplined and suspended. Schools should lead to college, to apprenticeships, to careers, but not to prison. We will not be free from want, however, simply because we want it to be so. We must do something far more difficult. We must regain our sense of civic responsibility. We must listen to each other, even when people are not talking about our issue. We must delay judgment even when we think we have the answer. We must remember that those people whose basic needs are not being met are necessarily focused on providing for ourselves and our families. I'm an active union member and an unapologetic liberal. And I believe that our communities can only prosper when everyone who can work has a job with fair wages and benefits. Labor unions remain an integral part of the progressive agenda, having brought us the 40-hour work week, and child labor laws and workplace safety. Many of our mothers, grandmothers, and great-grandmothers learned to organize and to affect change in labor unions. Nothing is more liberating than knowing you can pay your bills, give your loved ones what they need. In conclusion, to be free from want, we must discard our preconceived notions of who our neighbors are. The teacher doesn't wear a hard hat, and the construction worker doesn't stay up at night grading papers, but they both share a commitment to equality and fairness and dignity. Stand with us, those of us who are in organized labor. We union members must also embrace the other progressives in the community. Those who have diametrically different beliefs than our own have a dangerous tactic. They will try to divide us. We do not always need to agree to stand united. Let us strengthen and build a progressive coalition, making us a force with which to be reckoned. You are what democracy looks like.
Wow, and welcome to everyone. This is absolutely amazing. Welcome to all guests. I'm not going to name you all because that's part of my 3 minutes. So, I want to get right in and talk about why we're here. It was January 6th in 1941, during the 77th Congress, that Roosevelt insisted that people of all nations of the world share America's entitlement to Four Freedoms. We all know what the Four Freedoms are. However, history also tells us America's entitlement to these freedoms was not inclusive of all Americans in 1941. And we know this because of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the 1965 Voting Rights Act. We can all agree that the first freedom, freedom of speech and expression, would have made these two acts unnecessary. For it was Eleanor Roosevelt who... And finally, we need to recognize in our history it was mainly the women that drove the point and fought the battles. For it was Eleanor Roosevelt who referred to the Four Freedoms when advocating for the passage of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The United Nations in 1948 as the official document. Our entitlement of the Four Freedoms and Universal Declaration of Human Rights are inseparable. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. We are endowed with the reason and ethics and should act towards one another in the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood. Everyone is entitled to the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration, without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinions, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. Everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person. Everyone has the right to work. To free choice of employment, to just and favorable conditions of work, and to protection against unemployment. Everyone, without any discrimination, has the right to equal pay for equal work. Yeah. Everyone who works has the right to just and favorable remuneration, ensuring their family an existence worthy of human dignity, and supplemented, if necessary, by other means of social protection. Everyone has the right to form and join trade unions for the protection of their interests. Everyone has the right to stand to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of their family, including food, clothing, housing, medical care, and necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or other lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond their control. Motherhood and childhood are entitled to special care and assistance. All children, whether born out of wedlock, shall enjoy the same social protection. Everyone has a right to education. Education shall be free, at least at the elementary and fundamental stages. Education shall be directed to the full development of a human personality and to strengthening of respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms. Parents have a a prior right to choose the kind of education that shall be given to their children. There are 30 articles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It is these rights that we, as human beings, have to stand and defend any time they are threatened. In doing so, we will be covered under the four freedoms. Let's make these four freedoms of 1941 have true meaning for all in 2017.
Give a round of standing ovation to everyone up here.